Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cup Podcast. I'm Greg Ducharme. This is the round one recap of the Safeway Open. Joining me tonight, Kyle Porter. Kyle, happy opening day.
Yeah, I was having lunch today, and my wife didn't know that there was golf going on. And I was like, yeah, I got, you know, podcast tonight and, you know, whatever. And she was like, it's the new season already, isn't it? And I was like, actually, it is. Yeah. Did you enjoy the 3-day off season? And she was like, this is ridiculous.
My wife says the same thing. It's like the shortest turnaround of the year because you had a Monday finish.
Yeah.
Which just, I mean, you understand everything that goes on, but it just adds to the, it adds to the frustration for the wives.
Well, it's for sure. And not to mention the fact that there's, you know, you can kind of take a breath after US Open because you got a little bit of, you know, they're not the greatest fields in the world, but and Justin Thomas said this a couple weeks ago. He said, look, I'm like mentally locked in through the US Open. And that's sort of how I'm feeling right now of like, okay, it's not, you know, it's a little bit of a down week, but mentally I'm still like revved up here rather than kind of taking it down a notch.
Yeah. It feels like it's the middle of the season, but
yeah,
it's easy to forget this time. Cause this time of year, we're typically really kind of coasting in the game of golf, but you know,
We're all just mailing it in at this time of year.
Yeah. It's the fall, right?
It is
like coasting.
I mean, we joke about it, but there's not an off season. So I think we sort of create whatever an off season can look like, you know, of like, okay, yes, it matters that Joaquin Neiman won the Greenbrier in October or whatever, but it's not, you have to be able to step away from it a little bit and, you know, say, okay, the Torrey, the Pebble, that's the stuff that is more pertinent. So yeah.
Yeah. The intensity level changes. But as for this week, I mean, it really has been quite a start. I would say some names up there you may not have predicted. Russell Knox leads the way, 9 under par 63. He finished 127th in the FedEx Cup last year and failed to make the playoffs. And I think it was the first time since 2013, which is impressive. Really impressive player. Kyle, what'd you make of his round today?
Hold on just a second. I'm reading through this. So before we get to his round, the number 127 thing, would he be a guy that if you didn't have the, like everybody keeps their card type thing, would he still be eligible for this type of tournament because of past champion status?
Well, also 125 to 150 has some temper. They're going to get some starts.
That's right.
This is how, you know, who this happened to, Harris English last year.
Yeah,
was in a very similar place. I think Harris English might've been 149. He was way down and he gets into these fall events and he plays his way right back through the reshuffle and then ends up at Eastlake with a legitimate chance of winning. So
yeah,
it is important.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I mean, look, like he's somebody that there's so many of these guys and you see it in an event like this a lot of times where, I mean, Russell Knox is unbelievable at golf, right? And we've talked about him, what, never on this podcast because we're talking about DJ, we're talking about John Rahm, and that stuff just sort of overwhelms the Russell Knoxes of the world. But he was great on Thursday. You know, I mean, he made the middle of his first nine, he goes 3-3-3 on 4, 5, and 6 to get it to 4 under early. And I was watching, you see a lot of these guys, like Keegan got it to 3 under early. There was somebody else who was like kind of hot early on. It might've been Cameron Percy, and Russell Knox continued it throughout the back nine. I just think at a place like this, if you're not making bogeys and you're not backing things up, you're just giving yourself a chance down the stretch. And that's what he did. And he was great throughout.
Our fives that are all gettable, really. And you're looking at a situation where if you can keep the ball in play, and as you said, you avoid mistakes, and it's almost like your starting point is 68 and two or three putts fall, and all of a sudden you're right there in the right in the thick of things. So I think because that's a great point.
Doesn't a bogey here feel, and I don't know, this is hard, because I mean, doesn't a bogey at a place like this feel a little like a double, or like not a double, but like between like a one and a half over? Just because
you hit a bad shot at some point, right? If you go to like Olympia Fields, you could hit great shots and make a bogey.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but this week it feels like if you have a number of wedges into green, so you either hit it behind a tree and you had to chip out and you weren't able to get up and down, or you hit a bad approach shot and hit a bad chip, more likely than not. So there's definitely going to be a bad shot somewhere along the way, which makes it feel that much worse, because every bogey feels like a mistake, where there are some courses where it doesn't feel that way.
That's a great point. I was watching, I know we're going to get to him, but I was watching Spieth on, I can't help myself. I was watching Spieth on number 8 today. And he has this like 85-yard wedge, and it's not the greatest like angle, or, you know, I think he's on the upslope maybe, but he just flies this wedge. And you can kind of, you know how like when it's on TV, you can tell in the air, like, wow, that looks really long. That's what it felt like. And you're right. Like it was a terrible shot, and he ends up making bogey. But at a place like Olympia Fields or somewhere like that, that could have been a double very easily, based on kind of what, like the setup there, whether it runs away like over the back, or there's like thick rough or whatever. It was a very easy bogey for somebody like him, but it was still just like a horrendous shot that led to it.
But even after that, he still should have hit it. He still should have got that up and down. From watching it, he had an opportunity, I thought, to get that ball up and down, or make the putt at least. So even if you hit a horrible shot like that, there's that avenue where you feel like you can recover in one good shot again. So look, I'm not saying that the golf course is extremely easy, but it definitely hurts when you're making bogeys and there are so many players who aren't. And another guy like Brendan Steele goes out there today.
Shocker.
And right, shocker, the king of the Safeway Open for sure. He makes 7 birdies, no bogeys, which is an amazing round. But you start to look at it, well, he plays the par fives in 4 under. He makes 4 on all the par fives, and he makes no bogeys. So all of a sudden, a couple of putts fall and he shoots 65, and it looks so easy, and it feels so easy for him, and it makes it really sustainable going into the weekend.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I think the par fives thing, you know, it's interesting, because we look at this, we look at it so much differently than we look at a place that, like East Lake or like Olympia Fields. They're obviously different courses, but the par 70 versus par 72 thing, we just talk about them differently. Like, oh man, these guys are scoring. Whereas if it was a par 70, we'd be like, oh, they're grinding out pars. You know, it's interesting how differently we kind of talk about the way that guys are playing a course based on what the par of a hole is, even though they're still making the same score.
It's amazing. What do you think about the par? Because to me, par has one purpose in professional golf, and it's just so that when somebody's on 17, you know where they stand relative to somebody who's on number 3. If there was no par, it would be, well, this guy's at 263 for the week, or he's at 64 for the day, and this guy's at 15. You wouldn't be able to keep track. So that's the only purpose to me. What are your thoughts?
Wouldn't it be incredible if we got total numbers on the board and people are trying to do math? Like, well, he's at 264, but he's through 15, and this guy's at 250 through 11. So, I don't know. Now, par is silly to me. I mean, it is, and we always like, you know, I can't help myself. Like when somebody shoots a 59 on a par 70, and I'm like, it probably shouldn't count. It was on a par seven. And people are like, yeah, that's right. You're right. And I'm like, no, I'm trolling you. Like, this is idiotic because we can just call the, we could say it's a par 78. It doesn't mean anything.
It took him 59 strokes to get around the golf course.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Right. It took Russell Knox today 63 strokes to get around. But I don't know. That's my thing with par. People get all worked up when DJ shoots 30 under. But
yeah, the thing that we don't do is talk about, and that we actually should do, is like, how long was the golf course? Like, who cares about the par? Was it 8,000 yards? Was it 6,000 yards? Because then you're talking about, okay, well, you get around a 8,000 yard course in 64 strokes. That's pretty crazy.
Well, as much as I love this conversation, Kyle, we have found ourselves.
Producer Jacob is not pleased.
Yeah. Jacob usually runs a pretty tight ship here. And tonight we've misbehaved. But Jacob, I apologize. But anyway, Phil Mickelson today also. And great rounds by Brendan Steele and Russell Knox. We really got to give them the credit they deserve. But Phil Mickelson, he puts together a round of 71 today. Kyle, is there, before we talk about his round today, is there anything that you thought Phil could do this week that would make you feel like his chances at Wingfoot were legitimate?
No. And we talked about, I thought you were on this before the tournament, of like, look, this course, you can be competitive by hitting 20 fairways for the week or whatever. Like, you can still kind of manage your way around because of, you know, how not penal it is. And now we're hearing out of Wingfoot, like, you know, another massacre at Wingfoot, 3 over 1, you know, like, what the winning score could be over par, all these different things. And so it has absolutely no bearing to me on next week at all. But by the way, if I gave you, before we talk about Phil's round, if I gave you Knox up 2 on Steele or Steele for the rest of the week, like, who finishes higher? Who are you taking out of those two?
I think I prefer Steele.
Yeah.
Just the way he does it. Look, Knox, they played very similar rounds in that they're both bogey free, but the confidence that Steele has around this golf course is phenomenal. Russell Knox, I mean, he made half of his cuts last year. He made 11 of 22 cuts. Doesn't mean he can't have a great week this week, but Brendan Steele coming in was playing some really good golf down the stretch, which was one of the reasons why I was really high on him coming in this week. And the fact that he's won twice here, that definitely helps. But he's been playing some really good golf coming in. So I would go Steele.
Knox is kind of a low-key big game hunter. He's got listen to these wins. He's got HSBC Champions 2016. He's got Travelers, great field, great event. And he's got the 18 Irish Open. I mean, that's like, if you're looking at guys that have won 3 events, but not like no majors or anything, like, that's a really good resume.
Yeah, it is. You're talking about a World Golf Championship. It's impressive.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that he doesn't have the ability to hold on. It's nobody to kind of brush your shoulder off. I think Steele is playing. Like, I look at that round today from Russell Knox, and it's a great round. And you almost start to get into the category of, well, is that great round going to affect his next round? I'm not a huge fan of that conversation, but are things going to average out a little bit?
Yeah,
whereas for Steele, it was just so he didn't really do anything that was incredible. He just kind of plodded his way along and made 7 birdies. I feel like he could do that again for 3 straight days. It wasn't like this remarkable round. So yeah. I think that's probably why I'd favor Steele.
Yeah. You know who didn't make 7 birdies?
Phil Mickelson.
Phil Mickelson did not make 7 birdies.
He made some. He made some on his second 9. He got 3 in there, which was, you know.
Do you like? Terrible. Do you like him on a? And this is sort of related to the Wingfoot Safeway conversation. Do you like him right now on a really difficult course or a really easy course?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, see, it part of it is. This is my challenge with the really difficult course is attractive because he doesn't have to make, you don't have to make a ton of birdies. And if you're missing greens, if you're missing fairways and missing greens and it comes up to scrambling and everybody's missing fairways, everybody's missing greens, everybody's scrambling. Well, yeah. I'll take Phil in a short game contest all
day.
Yeah. Yeah. I still don't feel like he's going to give himself any birdie chances. That's what I feel like at Wingfoot. I feel like he's going to be scrambling. His birdie looks are going to be from the bunker, like Jacob and I were talking about before the show. Yeah, I have a ton of looks. They just happen to be, they're usually inside 100 yards.
I mean, I could like see the hole, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a look. And that's my worry with Phil. Yet on an easy course, I feel like he still figures out a way to make it hard.
Yeah, and that's a little bit what I'm getting at. I almost feel like Phil at this point of his career, like if you would ask me 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I would say I love Phil, I think, on an easier course because he just makes so many birdies. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So aggressive.
And not that Augusta is not an easy course, but you can give yourself so many opportunities to make birdie, and he's done that over the course of his career. And now I almost like him more on a hard course because it's like, okay, is Phil going to get up and down like 16 times? Probably not, but maybe. I mean, to me, that just seems more likely than the birdie thing right now.
Do you worry about on a hard course that do you worry about his concentration? I know we've talked about that, how that's his biggest thing, but I picture Phil at Shinnecock hitting a moving putt, and I picture a little bit of frustration.
That's a
good
point.
I don't know if he can handle that frustration.
That's a good point. No, that's true. And I guess, you know, the argument would be like, although whenever he finished second at Troon, you know, third was like five under. It wasn't easy. He just made it look easy. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's an interesting conversation because I think that with the best guys, they want to be on the hardest courses. And I would be curious how he would answer that right now.
Well, today he hit 5 of 14 fairways. We know that's not going to work at Wingfoot, but no. If you're interested, Kyle, you can get him 80-1 with our friends at William Hill at Wingfoot. So pretty long odds. Are they long enough for you?
Will they give him to me at 800-1? Because that's what it would have to be at.
I don't even know if it's worth the one at that. I mean, I guess you throw a couple shekels at it at 800, but yeah. 80 seems a little tight for me. I know. Yes. I'm staying away. I mean, 5 of 14 fairways today. You need more than that. I just think it's going to be so tough next week to handle that.
You know what's crazy? I wrote about this a little bit earlier in the week. I think this is his 30th professional, the start of his 30th professional season. Which, I mean, we kind of are in this weird part of his career where we're like, I don't know what he is, what he's doing to be that good for 30 years. I mean, his two things are consistency and staying healthy, right? Like that, nobody's been better at that over the course of 30 years than he has. I mean, he's got whatever 600 starts on the PGA Tour. He just, I almost feel like he doesn't get enough credit for how good he's been for three decades. I mean, it's truly incredible.
It's a great point. And there's one thing that he I feel like it's the one thing that he's missing, and it's because of all these close calls at US Opens that we feel like, and because of his health, we still feel like there's a chance. So he's still in the conversation. Whereas a guy like Jim Furyk, for example, who's playing this week, still has plenty of game. He's had an extremely long and consistent career, but he's not chasing a career Grand Slam. So if he goes to play Wingfoot where he was in the mix in 2006, he wouldn't get the attention Phil gets.
And, you know, sorry to jump in there, but I think that the way that I think about Phil, and we can move on to, because he's not going to win this week, we can move on to the guys that actually might win. The way that I think about Phil was completed when he won at Muirfield. The U.S. Open thing, it's like, man, if you're good enough to finish second six times, like your game is so historically good. And I think to do what he did at Muirfield, that was the place where you're like, I don't know. Like, I don't know I don't know how that works. I don't know. And he was, that round and that tournament in 13 at Muirfield was so incredible that it sort of just rounded out the way that I felt about him, no matter what he did from that point on. So going into the US Open, I'm kind of like, he's not going to win. And I don't know that I really care. I understand who and what Phil is over the course of his career.
Yeah. His place is not going anywhere in history. And to add to that, you mentioned, even he didn't know if he would ever have the shots to win an Open. And he did. And then he almost did it again in 16. If it weren't for, and Fuego Henrik Stenson, which is just, I mean, one of the best performances we've ever seen in a major. That's what it took to beat him. But you mentioned guys who actually have a chance to win. So of course, that leads us to Jordan Spieth.
And okay, listen, I want, let me go first because I actually want, I think you'll be better on this. So I watched part of his round. So I couldn't watch all of it, but even on his first tee shot, I'm like, he looks so uncomfortable. Like his setup, his waggle, like all this stuff. It's just like, it's tough to look at. And then he swings. And I got to say, Greg, like he's kind of hitting it okay. It looks like he's going to fall down. Like he looks so off balance with his swing. And technically I have no idea what that is. You would be better on that than I am. I don't understand. He's almost just so wound up with the swing that it's hard to imagine him being able to get out of it in his current state.
So I think there's a few things here. Are there technical things you can see that are flaws in his motion? Yeah, of course. But at the same time, there always has been.
Yeah.
Even in 2015, 2016, this wasn't a beautiful swing to watch. Watching Jordan Spieth is not enjoyable because it looks, this is not watching Adam Scott, and it never has been, right? This isn't a guy who's smoother than everybody else. This is a flair for the dramatic, and it's dramatic, good and bad, and recovering good and bad. And that requires a lot of confidence and a lot of strength, but at the same time, it requires a simplicity. And I think of Jordan as a guy who had these flaws when he was at his very best. He had flaws in his game and everybody knew it. He knew it, but he didn't care. He just went out and figured out how to shoot scores. And it was a very sort of caveman approach to the game where he's going to hit it to a side of the hole and then he's going to hit it to the green and he's going to make a putt. And it didn't matter how it looked. It didn't matter what the ball did. He was going to yell at it and talk to it and he was going to listen at some point and then he was going to make a putt.
Yeah.
And Brooks Koepka described him as the most annoying person to play against, not because of anything that he did or said. At least that's not what Brooks said. It was because you always felt like you had an advantage on him and then he'd make a 25 footer. And you felt like you could never get ahead playing against Jordan because he would always make, it was scrappy. And now we're seeing a Jordan who has things that are complicated in his mind. And that's why you start to see him lose balance. That's why you see the fidgeting before he hits the ball. That's why you see the discomfort, which part of which you've seen, but it's elevated now because there's a lot going on in his mind and things aren't simple and he's trying to fix problems. So,
yeah, I heard about one top 25 guy who, I mean, you would say this guy's a superstar and he, after Spieth won Pebble in 17, I think he won it going away like by 4 or 5 or something like that. This guy was like, that's problematic because of the consistency. And he's just repeat over and over. And that's like the opposite of what we're seeing right now. And I love your point about like, you know, I heard this great thing about Nicklaus the other day about how, you know, he would like try to hit the center of a green and maybe try to fade it a little, maybe try to draw it a little, depending on where the pin was. But as long as you're aiming at the center of the green and you're kind of, you know, you might miss hit it a little bit. Like you're still like around, you're not firing at every pin. And even watching him on 8 today, I know he's 85 yards out, but there's trouble only long. He's got all this room to the left and he's just firing right at the pin. And it's like, you end up making bogey. It doesn't feel like who he used to be like mentally around. And again, that's one shot and whatever. Like I don't know what I'm talking about, like with his mental approach, but that was just one thing that kind of stood out to me as you're talking about Spieth kind of trying to find the center of these greens.
Yeah. And I'll make one last point, which actually, I was talking to Michael Breed this morning. We were talking about Jordan and he believes that Jordan is chasing statistics, which I found very interesting because I used the whack-a-mole analogy the other day and I feel like Jordan's always chasing. And that to me says he's looking at the same thing we're looking at. Okay, well, he's starting to slip in his iron play. So he chases iron play, and then his putter becomes a problem. And then he goes back to the putter, gets that fixed, but then the ball striking becomes a problem. And they're constantly chasing, and it takes away from the scoring mindset that he used to always have, which is kind of where you're playing like a kid. And I want to see Jordan get back to that, where it's like the RBC Heritage on the second nine this year, where he stops working on what he's working on and shoots 29. That's still in there. We got to see it again. And I want to see it again for four straight rounds.
He needs Mark to give him a strokes gain heart pep talk.
Yeah, maybe. So I don't know.
Strokes gain heartbeat. Yeah.
Strokes gain heartbeat, right? Calm yourself down. Let's do a little bit of scoring. But anyway, there are some players who do have a legitimate chance at winning this tournament. One of them, extremely impressive, very nice to see, Akshay Bhatia. He's an 18-year-old looking to make his first PGA Tour cut. He turned pro last year. He's from the Wake Forest area, decided not to go to college. He took a lot of scrutiny for that. So it's really nice to see Akshay in the lead. Kyle, I know you were interested in talking about this before the show. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, let's group all these guys together because I want to get your thoughts on just sort of like the youth that's in here. So we got Akshay at six. We got Andy Zhang at six. Andy Zhang went to Florida, played in the U.S. Open in 2012 as a 14-year-old. I don't remember that. Where was the 2012 U.S. Open? That was Rory at Congressional, I think.
I thought that was 2011.
Oh, 12 was Olympic. Webb.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Webb. And then we got Sahith Tagala, who played at Pepperdine and won the 2020 Heisman of College Golf, which is the Haskins Award. So all these guys are great, and they're all what did Tagala shoot on Thursday, by the way? Do we have that? He might not be done yet.
I don't think he finished.
So Akshay six, Zhang six. So they're both kind of, I mean, they're both very much in the mix. I want your take on, do you get more excited about a guy like Tagala or Zhang who's gone a couple years in college? I don't know how many, I don't know if either of them went all four, but at least spent some time in college, gotten that grind in a little bit. Or do you get more excited about a guy like Bhatia who is much more raw for sure because he's 18, but could potentially have a higher ceiling? Like which route, like if you're just in a vacuum choosing one of those routes, which one do you get more excited about?
Well, I would, as a coach, I would recommend the college route. No question about it. I mean, there is a point where, and so Akshay works with George Gankus, and he has said, George has said, look, this is a decision he's developing in, at the pro level. Other guys have decided to develop in college. They're all going to develop. And George, who also coaches Matthew Wolf, that's his best known student, but he works with a number of players on tour. He thinks the world of Akshay, and he thinks he's going to be around for a really long time. But anyway, I worry about the non-college route a little bit more. I think it's a more challenging route, and I think you miss out on experiences that are really important, not just on the golf course. I mean, learning how to live on your own is a really important thing, that you develop some skills in college. And but at the same time, you have this opportunity when you're a player of Akshay's level to go and basically be treated like a superstar, which you're not going to get for a really long time. You have these facilities that are just unbelievable. If you see what they have at Arizona State or Georgia Tech or Wake Forest, which is, you know, where he's from, these facilities are world-class facilities. And you have an opportunity to go learn there. And then you add to that the players who have had success coming right out of college. You look at not just Wolf, Hovland, and Morikawa, who are more famous of the bunch, but you also have Bryson and you have Jordan Spieth and Brandon Rahm.
Brandon Wu.
I mean, these kids come out of college ready to go, and it's because of the experiences they gain in college. Does that mean Akshay can't do it? No, but there's like a group. You come up with a class, and when you come up with that class, you say, okay, well, Colin Morikawa just won the PGA Championship. Yeah. I beat him in college.
Yeah.
I can play. And so for Matthew Wolf and Hovland, these guys are going to feel more confident when Colin Morikawa has more success. Akshay, I don't know if he's going to have that.
I'm fascinated by Akshay. I hope he makes the cut. He's missed each of his first six, even though he's played pretty well in, I think, at least one of the two rounds in all of them. I saw something about how well he had played, or at least under par, in at least one of the two rounds of all the six tournaments that he's played, but he hadn't made a cut yet. So I'd love to see him just mix it up a little, you know, and not yeah. just for his sake, just to get that confidence of like, oh yeah, I can actually do this. Because look, the way that you and I talk about a Safeway Open is like way far away from how Akshay would view it in terms of competing. That would be a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Like, or it should be, it should be. And so I would love to see that for him. Cause yeah, I'm fascinated by him. Great, like super interesting swing. He's an interesting guy that I hope has a lot of success. All these guys, but he's the one that I'm kind of most fascinated by.
I agree. He's the more, definitely the most interesting. And for Andy and Sahith here, they almost get lumped into this is what's coming up the pipeline, right?
Yeah,
they almost get into this norm, whereas Akshay did something different. So he draws a little bit more attention.
Yeah, so interesting. Sahith and Zhang are kind of in that like Will Zalatoris, who's the kid from Alabama that's in the US Open. I was just writing about him today. Davis Riley.
Yeah.
I think he was first or second in points on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. That's kind of the way that I think about those guys. And look, I think all those guys are going to be solid players on the PGA Tour. I just don't know that the ceiling is, and maybe this is just like a perceived ceiling because he's so young, right? Like I don't know what the actual ceiling is, but
it's a hype meter. It's how much hype did they get?
Yeah, totally.
So it's very interesting to see. Definitely rooting for him because all these players, I mean, this is, like you said, Kyle, even though despite the way that we look at this event through a different lens because we're used to covering events with the big boys, especially this year with the strength of fields that we've had. But don't forget, this is full FedEx Cup points. And a win in an event like this for one of these players changes their lives. And a second or third could get them an opportunity to really keep their dream alive. So it's something that we're definitely interested in seeing. But speaking of the big guns, speaking of big game hunters, we're going to talk a little Brooks Koepka. He withdrew from the US Open. But first, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there. And I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Okay, Kyle. The man who finished second last year in the U.S. Open, first the year before that, and first the year before that is not going to be playing this year at Wingfoot, Brooks Koepka, of course. What do you make of it?
Well, I'm curious to see if you agree with this. I don't know that it changes the way that I think about the U.S. Open. I remain sort of ambivalent about where Brooks is at right now. He had two good rounds at PGA. Kind of hung in on Saturday when it was kind of falling apart. And then he was terrible on Sunday. And so I don't know that I was going to go. I'll do like a power rankings next week for like the top 20 guys going into the U.S. Open. He would have been on it out of respect, but it wouldn't have been in the top 12, probably. I would have had him, you know, 15, 18, something like that, because of his play this year, because of the injury stuff. So I just, it stinks, obviously, because I want all of the big guys to be playing their best golf in all these majors, but I don't know that it really changes the way that I think about this tournament.
What about the way you think about Brooks? I mean, we're talking about, this happened, I mean, we're coming up on a year ago where he slips and re-aggravated it. And you know what? It probably is maybe more than a year ago when the initial tear happened. Because remember, he had a little stem cell procedure done, and then he's ready to play for CJ Cup, slips on pavement and re-aggravates it. And here we are in September of 2020, and we're all expecting this to be over before Masters. We're expecting him to be ready in April in the original 2020 Masters, and now here we are in September and he's withdrawing from another major. Are you concerned long term?
For sure. I remember being on the No Laying Up podcast at the end of, it was right after the President's Cup. It was in December, like middle of December last year, and we were talking about kind of year end stuff, and I said, hey, are we at all concerned about like the Koepka stuff, like the knee stuff? And we were kind of all got on the same page of like, I don't know, not really. Like, he's kind of had some injury stuff before, but I don't know, not particularly. And then the more it went on, you get to Riviera and he's like, I don't know if I'll ever be the same again. You get to, I think it was Arnold Palmer, and he's like, he just starts saying all this stuff along the way. And you're like, this feels problematic. Like, it doesn't feel like nothing, you know, like, a JT wrist injury just goes away. A Koepka wrist injury from a couple years ago, you're kind of like, oh, okay, like that was a thing and now it's not a thing.
A DJ this, knee injury?
Of course. This is starting to feel like, okay, is that it for winning majors? Which sounds dumb. Like, I sound like an idiot saying that, but I think he's 30. We talked about this on Tuesday. Like, Well, so many guys that win all these majors, it's so compact. It's in such a short period of time. And in that period of time, it feels like they're going to win 10 of them. But you get to the end of their career, and it's like, oh, well, those are all the ones that they won just in that tiny period of time. So I think those are kind of some of the things I think about as I think about Brooks long term.
I hope that this is kind of a 1 year thing, and I hope he gets out of it. Even if it's a 2 year thing, I hope that this isn't the way that it ends, because his career is one of the more fascinating careers we have in the game. And I call it now the post Tiger era. It is fascinating. And he just mixes up the whole debate. And he's the one guy that gets thrown in there that kind of changes the way you think about things. So I want that career to play out, and I don't like seeing careers end because of injury. It just kind of feels like a little bit of a letdown.
Did you like his style, his game at Wingfoot? I mean, it's great everywhere, but particularly at Wingfoot?
Well, no, not necessarily. I think there are a couple tee shots at Wingfoot that are great for faders. But I worried about some of these tee shots where they really ask for a draw. And
this is why you're picking Xander, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the reasons. One of many. Xander seems to check all the boxes for me, but I do think moving the ball right to left is important on a lot of holes. Now, there are tee shots like number 8 on the first 9, which is a big boy hole. And there's one other that's kind of escaping me right now, which 17 is another fade shot. But you can play on 17 anyway. You can work it either way. So you're looking at one kind of must fade. And the rest, they really favor a draw. So I worried about that a little bit. But all that being said, players of today are learning how to make that work. And it's mattering less and less which direction the golf course favors. So I think Brooks on hard golf courses seems to do really well. And I would have been surprised, because I don't think the game makeup is what you would expect to do well at Wingfoot. Yet he seems to figure it out on hard courses.
Real quick, because I don't want to bring this up next week because Mark will make fun of me. But I made a 2 on number 7 at Wingfoot.
Nice. Yeah. So what was your the pitch shot you had? Oh no, 7's the par 3. That's Babe in the Woods. So that's that.
It's like a 40-foot putt. It would have gone probably 60 feet past if it hadn't hit the hole. Okay, we're going off script, but give me your So the Pinehurst news came out this week, USGA going to Pinehurst. Give me, people are just freaking out about this Rota for the US Open. Yeah. Give me your six course US Open Rota.
Okay. I fortunately thought about this today. So Wingfoot, Oakmont, no question. We'll throw Pinehurst in there because they're the ones, I guess, started the whole thing. So you got Wingfoot, Oakmont, Pinehurst, Pebble, no question about it. And then I think you have Torrey Pines, and I'm missing a, Shinnecock would be six.
So Torrey would be, wait, was that six?
Yeah.
Wingfoot, Shinnecock, Oakmont, Pebble, Torrey, Pinehurst. Okay, so Torrey would be your sixth.
Yeah, and the reason for Torrey, I guess you could replace it with like an Olympic Club or something. I do think you need another West Coast.
You know what would be fascinating is, and I don't know if infrastructurally they could do it, but something like Riviera.
Yeah. It's hosted majors long ago. I guess it hasn't recently, but it would be fascinating.
Or I'm interested to see how LACC goes in 25.
I've heard great things.
23, whenever they're getting that. So I think the five there, the Shinnecock, Wingfoot, Oakmont, Pinehurst, Pebble, that's, I think it feels a little universal. Like it feels like that's kind of where everybody's at. It's just, what do you do with the six? I sort of am on the side of leaving it open for
like a Chambers Bay,
the Chambers, the Erin Hills, those types of places where you're not kind of boxing yourself in for the next, by the way, do we need a 2047 date on the US Open?
I know, it cracks me up. They do it with the Ryder Cup too. I don't understand it. So many things change, but I guess Pinehurst, with all of its history, it's very likely to be exactly the way that we think about it now in 2047. But you're right; it seems a little bit.
My kids will be my age whenever, like what I am right now. Whenever the 2047 US Open.
I guess they got to get ready for the reverse bowl green. Start prepping them now. Maybe 2047. There could be a statue made after them.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Kyle, thanks for joining us. We are way overboard. We have poor Jacob. We've gotten him in a lot of trouble tonight.
Yeah, so
Jacob, thank you for your patience and not blowing up our chat too much. That's Kyle Porter. You can catch him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. I'm Greg Ducharme. You can get me on Twitter at The Real GFD. That's all we have for you today, but join us again tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and Friday. Of course, all next week. It's a new season. So thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.